I love talking about autoimmunity because there's a misconception about it. A lot of people think that unless they've got a diagnosis of Hashimoto's thyroiditis or rheumatoid arthritis, that it doesn't affect them. Mm. But when you look at the data, when you look at something called anti-nuclear antibodies, and you look at some of the labs and the rate of positive of anti-nuclear antibodies in a population, it's something like 30% of us. So there's Wow. been this exponential rise in autoimmunity. And let me just define it so we're all on the same page. So there's a state of health where your immune system is working just perfectly. And then there's autoimmune disease, which is where you're making antibodies. They're these proteins that your immune cells make as a weapon against your own tissues. So there's about 100 autoimmune diseases, but there's a vast middle space, a continuum, where you develop autoimmunity. And so there's a lot of different reasons for why that's increased. The food supply, mm-hmm. the stress that we're experiencing, hormonal changes, all of those things contribute to a pretty dramatic increased risk of autoimmunity, which can go on for 7 to 14 years before it declares itself as a disease and gets diagnosed by a clinician. So autoimmunity is definitely on the rise, and we've especially seen a dramatic increase after the pandemic. So we think that things like long COVID are also autoimmune, and even some conditions that you might not think of as autoimmune diseases, like endometriosis, some types of irritable bowel syndrome, fibromyalgia, those things are a condition in which the body is attacking itself. Mm. So we've got to broaden the way that we think of autoimmunity. And when you do that, so many more people suffer with it than you might realize. Mm.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I feel as though... Yeah, I feel as though there are a lot of people in our community who are having a hard time reckoning with a diagnosis of an autoimmune disease, but then also having been either misdiagnosed or a delayed diagnosis for so long, and they're really seeking, and I think it's intuitive, they're really seeking this hybrid approach, you know, an Eastern and Western approach, or maybe some people would say like a more holistic approach, because they're realizing that just the Western medical approach is not necessarily curing it or helping it, and or hasn't helped them up until this point. So I guess what would you say about that, having come from a Western medical background, but then also I know that you have a more holistic approach?
Lindsay, I would go one step further. I would say the Western medical approach utterly fails yeah. these folks. And I'm one of them. So I also have autoimmunity. It's something that I've been able to reverse over the past few years as I wrote this book. But what we know is that if you just look at the basic statistics of autoimmune disease, we know that people typically see about 4 to 6 doctors, and they struggle with symptoms of autoimmune disease for about 4 to 7 years before they get a correct diagnosis. So to me, that is a place where we are just missing the mark as conventional physicians. And I trained in the conventional system, as you mentioned. So I'm not throwing it under the bus. We need it for acute care. We need it when you break a bone, when you've got an infection. But for chronic conditions such as autoimmune disease, there's a massive gap that people experience. And it leads to just so much frustration and heartache and, yes. you know, just searching for answers, and you don't know why these mysterious symptoms are happening. Mm-hmm. And then you go to your doctor and often you're told, well, you're just getting older. Well, you just had a baby. Well, are you sleeping enough? And so there's a way that people can get gaslit and dismissed, and we've got to change that. So yes, a hybrid approach. You know, I'm the director of precision medicine at the Marcus Institute at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. And so we have an approach that is looking at genetics and looking at biomarkers. You know, some of these early tests, like the one I mentioned, anti-nuclear antibodies. I run an autoimmune panel on every single patient that I see.
Wow. And those autoimmune panels, I guess they're showing a predisposition?
They show a predisposition. So if you look at what's required to develop an autoimmune disease, there's three things. And this was first described by Alessio Fasano, who's a pediatric gastroenterologist at Massachusetts General Hospital. So the three-legged stool is genetic predisposition together with increased intestinal permeability, so-called leaky gut, and then a trigger. And the trigger is really critical because for some people, that's pregnancy and being postpartum. It's a really common time to develop Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It could be perimenopause. That's where we see a lot of vaccine reactions. It's when there's new onset multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes. I've seen all of these things in my practice. It could also be toxic stress and trauma. So we know that people who experience adverse childhood experiences or ACEs, they then have an increased risk of about 45 different chronic diseases, including autoimmune disease. Mm.
And I really want to dig in here because I think this is where people would consider, I guess, the emotional experience of a person. People might have a hard time like understanding the connection to the body if they haven't made that connection quite yet. And so can you go a step further and just describe how a traumatic experience, whether it's big T or little T, and maybe there's a difference in how it affects the actual physical body, but how does that happen? And then how does it take such a stronghold in the body that it develops something like an autoimmune disease?
Great question. So I know our listeners and viewers love to go deep on the science, and this is a science moment. Great. So the big T and the little T traumas, in some ways, it doesn't matter what the event was. So big T trauma is something that everyone agrees was traumatic, surviving 9/11, for instance, or going through a genocide. The death of someone that you're really close to, especially if it's sudden. So there's the big T traumas, and then there's the small T traumas. The things like a breakup with a partner or, losing a job. Things that still can have a signature in the body. And the signature is interesting because the signature doesn't really care whether it was a big T or a little T. So the way that the body changes is critical. And the way that we know this happens is through the stress response. So if you think of kind of the classic stress response, it was designed to deal with, living on the savanna, being exposed to like a predator, getting maybe a wound from the predator, and then your body kicks into gear to fight infection. So your immune system flies into the wound to kind of take care of business and to limit exposure to bacteria and risk of infection. And so that was designed to happen maybe like once a month, once a quarter, or something like that. We're not designed to experience the level of trauma that we are all exposed to nowadays. So if you look at the stress response, what a lot of people think of is the way that the brain talks to the adrenal glands. So that's called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. But the stress response is much bigger than that. So the way that I think of it in terms of the signature of trauma is that your PINE system is affected. So that's your psychology, that's the P, your immune system, that's the I, your neurological system, especially your vagus nerve, which is, the signal to the body that you're soothed and you're safe. And then finally, the endocrine system. So your hormones, and it's not just, people think of the main stress hormones as cortisol and epinephrine, and it's actually much broader than that. So it includes estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, even insulin and its effect on glucose. So this entire pine network is affected by trauma and toxic stress. And that's what we need to consider, because that then sets you up for autoimmunity, especially if you're female, because 4 out of 5 people with autoimmune disease are female.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Morning Microdose by Almost 30.
We hope you enjoyed waking up.
As always, we encourage you to take what resonates and leave the rest. If you enjoyed this trip, tune into the full episode on the Almost 30 podcast. All episode information can be found in the show notes.
Make sure to subscribe, and if this becomes a part of your morning routine, be sure to share it with a friend. We have new inspiring doses Monday through Friday. Follow us on Instagram at Morning Microdose and follow Almost 30 at Almost 30 Podcast.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the vortex.